Hello, and welcome to the podcast for Chapter 12, The Pursuit of Perfection. Some Americans worried that the people were not yet completely fit to govern, but could be made so. This chapter discusses the wide variety of reform movements that arose between the War of 1812 and the Civil War. The rise of evangelicalism. The separation of church and state gave all religious denominations equal opportunity to attract members and encourage all denominations to seek converts actively. Alarmed by what they considered infidelity, pious Protestants formed voluntary associations to combat the sin. The Second Great Awakening, the Frontier Phase. Camp meetings not only provided emotional religion for the frontier, but also one of the few opportunities for social life for rural people whose everyday lives were often tedious and lonely. Camp meeting revivals, however, did not usually lead to organized social reform because the thirst of the religious message was so intensely personal. The Second Great Awakening in the North. There were two branches of evangelical revival in the North. The first started in New England, where theologians such as Timothy Dwight and Lyman Beecher preserved but modified Calvinism by emphasizing the doctrine of free agency. The second branch took root in upstate New York, in an area of transplanted New Englanders. There, the greatest revivalist was Charles Finney, who paid no attention to theology, but preached an unqualified doctrine of free will. Finney successfully experimented with revival techniques, such as the anxious bench, and his revival often led to the organization of more churches. From revivalism to reform. The Northern Revival stimulated reform movements by appealing to the middle-class citizen who had been socially active before their conversions and who now found a way to preserve traditional values in a rapidly changing world. The various evangelical reform movements, known collectively as the Benevolent Empire, actually did alter American life. The temperance movement, for example, enlisted over 1 million members, mostly women, who successfully persuaded Americans to cut their consumption of alcohol by more than 50%. Evangelicals and reformers assigned the family, and especially mothers, a crucial role in developing self-disciplined Christian children. Marriage for love. By the 19th century, marriage had changed profoundly. Mutual love became the only acceptable reason for marriage, and couples were expected to remain in love after marriage. This development gave women much more social influence, despite their continual legal inequity. The cult of true womanhood placed women in the home, but the home was glorified as the center of all efforts to civilize and Christianize society. Most women who were married to farmers or laborers still contributed to family income, but more and more middle and upper class women could afford to dedicate themselves to the home, making it a sanctuary from the outside world. Many women who found themselves liberated from the drudgery of farm chores used their leisure to improve themselves, to get to know other women, and to lead the crusades against vice. Above all, however, they attempted to become ideal mothers. The cult of domesticity. The glorification of the role of the wife slash mother has been described as the cult of domesticity, or the cult of true womanhood. The reason behind this new conception of femininity was the increasing division of the working lives of men and women. As industrialism began to grow, men's place of work began to be separate from the household at the same time that women were being more closely confined within it. The doctrine of separate spheres emerged to justify and glorify this new pattern. While men toiled in the harsh working world, women provided the welcome domestic sphere for the men to come home to. Middle and upper class women in particular gained from those two concepts. For some such women, the domestic ideal sanctioned efforts to expand their activities into new masculine world of work for the purpose of reform. If women were moral and pure enough to be entrusted with the rearing of children and keeping of the home, then surely they could make the world a better place through their reform. The discovery of childhood. In the 19th century, the child was placed at the center of family life. Each child was looked upon as unique and irreplaceable. Ideal parents no longer broke a child's will, they formed his character with affection. Parental discipline was meant to instill guilt rather than fear, so that the child would eventually learn self-discipline. Institutional reforms. Reformers hoped that public institutions, such as school, would continue what the family had begun, or that institutions such as asylums or prisons would mend what the family had failed to do. The extension of education. Between 1820 and 1850, public school systems expanded rapidly, especially in the North, originally demanded by the working class as a means for advancement. The public schools were seized by middle-class reformers who saw them as the ideal instrument for inculcating values of hard work and responsibility. Horace Mann overcame the objections of taxpayers who resented having to subsidize the education of the poor by pointing out that the public schools would save children of the poor and the immigrants from becoming like their parents, vile and troublesome, and a public expense. Many parents, especially Catholics, resented public schools, believing they alienated children from their parents. Discovering the asylum. For those who lacked self-discipline, the poor, the criminal, and the insane, reformers hoped harsh measures would lead to rehabilitation. Prisoners, for example, were put into solitary confinement and had to conform to a strict daily schedule at such a model prison as such as one as Auburn in New York. Rehabilitation, however, seemed not to work. Public support was always skimpy, and most prisons or asylums and poorhouses became warehouses for the unwanted, who lived in abysmal conditions despite the heroic efforts of Dorothea Dix, who worked tirelessly to bring some decency to these institutions. Reform turns radical. Most reformers wanted to improve society, but some of the more radical wanted to destroy society as it existed and create a new, perfect social order. Division in the benevolent empire. By the 1830s, radical perfectionists had become impatient with moderate reforms and began to form their own societies. The temperance and peace movements split into moderate and radical wings, but the split among the opponents of slavery had a more important consequences. Moderate abolitionists hoped for a more gradual end to slavery, which they saw as only realistic possibility, and they even supported removal of blacks from the United States as a concession to white racism. Radical abolitionists like William Lloyd Garrison demanded immediate emancipation and formed the American Anti-Slavery Society in 1833. The abolitionist enterprise. Abolitionists grew from the evangelical tradition and drew strength from it. The good example is Theodore Dwight Weld, an itinerant minister who had been converted by Finney. When he became an abolitionist, Weld simply adapted his revivalist techniques to a new cause. Weld was extremely successful in northern Ohio and western New York, where he held mass meetings. The abolitionist appealed mainly to ambitious and hard-working inhabitants of small towns, but often encountered opposition from the working class, who disliked blacks and feared their economic and social competition, and from solid citizens who regarded abolitionists as anarchists. Black abolitionists. Free Northern blacks were active in the abolitionist movement from the beginning. The stories of former slaves were printed as narratives, and escaped slaves were some of the most convincing orators of the anti-slavery cause. Eventually, conflict arose between blacks and white abolitionists, leading to the establishment of a separate black anti-slavery movement in the 1830s. In addition to speaking out against slavery, a vital part of the black anti-slavery movement was the Underground Railroad. Though the abolitionist movement did not end slavery, it did bring it to the forefront of public consciousness. From Abolitionism to Women's Rights. The abolitionist movement gave many women an opportunity to engage in a public reform program. In advocating freedom for blacks, women began to realize their own inequality. When they discovered that many male abolitionists refused to accept women as equal partners in protest, women led by Lucretia Mott and Elizabeth Cady Stanton organized the Seneca Falls Convention in 1848, which was the beginning of the movement for the female rights. Radical ideals and experiments. In addition to the reform movements inspired by evangelical piety, other attempts were made to create perfect individuals or a perfect society. For example, another number of utopian communities were established, such as the Oneida Community or Brook Farms, but most were short-lived. Intellectuals, repelled by the crudity of the revivalists, sought intense religious experience in a literary and a philosophical movement called Transcendentalism. Prospective critics like Nathaniel Hawthorne regarded the nation's pursuit of perfection with a skeptical eye, but the reform impulse, no matter how eccentric at times, opened up the way to necessary changes in American life. Well, once again, that was the podcast for Chapter 12. As always, if you have any questions, please feel free to leave me a comment on my website or email me at dshockett@washoe.k12.nv.us. And until next time, we'll catch you later.